Welcome to this week's Investors Chronicle Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Lenora Walters, and joining me today are Kate Bailey, Deputy Personal Finance Editor at Investors Chronicle, Chris Dillow, Investors Chronicle's economist, and personal finance writer Emma Adjiman, who has joined the team this week. Welcome on board, Emma. After 2 years in the doldrums, gold has been rocketing as investors pile into what they see as a safe haven. But gold is not necessarily the shining beacon of safety you thought it was, as Kate has been finding out. Kate, first of all, why can gold be useful in times of market turmoil?
Well, people tend to turn to gold because it performs very differently to other asset classes, and it's seen as a very uncorrelated source of returns. So, you know, if everything else is tanking, and with QE having kind of pushed the returns of bonds and equities to more similar levels, the idea is that you might want gold as a kind of insurance asset to protect or to kind of put your money in the hope that it will kind of hold up when everything else is going badly, or just do something different to the rest of your portfolio.
Okay, that's good. So why in your article in this week's issue do you also say that gold is not a haven or even necessarily a store of value?
Well, I think the issue is that it's often referred to as a safe haven, but that gives this impression that, well, safe gives the impression that if you put your money in gold, you know, it will never go down. But in fact, gold's an incredibly volatile asset. So I think there's a big difference between a defensive uncorrelated asset and this concept of a safe haven, which offers protection in all environments. So I think I've just kind of drawn attention to the fact that actually, while gold is surging at the moment, as other things fall, in previous years we've had massive, massive falls from gold. So it's a very volatile place to put your money. It also doesn't pay out any interest. And you often hear people say that gold has no intrinsic value, and all its value is kind of extrinsic and how it's perceived. So while I'm not saying it's a bad thing to invest in, there are definitely good reasons. I just think, you know, some of this language around safe haven and store of value are maybe things that need to be questioned or you need to be a bit careful of.
Okay, so bearing all that in mind, how could you use gold in your portfolio?
Well, I think the way to use it is as a diversifier and to have quite a small weighting towards it. And the way that I've looked at holding it is through an exchange-traded commodity. So this is an ETC and physically backed rather than synthetic. So this is obviously the ETC actually does hold the gold or is backed by gold bullion held in a bank as opposed to tracking.
An ETC being an exchange-traded commodity.
That's right.
A sort of ETF.
Yeah. Like an ETF, but with commodities rather than being a fund.
So you're saying investors should go for this option and you favour a physical one. Mm. What do investors need to consider when choosing one of these funds?
Well, I think for a start, make sure it is a physical one that you're looking at, because the names of them alone, it's not that easy to tell necessarily which are the physical and which are the synthetic. So make sure it is backed by gold bullion and you're not actually tracking the futures price of gold, which is very volatile.
That's what a synthetic ETF does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So then you would be tracking, you know, gold derivatives contracts, and that is kind of a more volatile and more risky way of playing it maybe, and doesn't give you exposure to the spot price of gold. I would also say look for the larger ETFs, which will be more liquid, and then there will be a less of a gap between the buy and sell price, or the spread as we call it. So I think those are the key things to bear in mind, and obviously have a look at the ongoing charge.
Okay, that's some useful points. Now Chris, you've obviously written quite a lot about gold as well over the years. Just first of all, Kate mentioned it had been surging. Why has the gold price been surging? Is it just because of investors piling in, or are there any other things going on?
Well, I think the key here is what Kate said about gold not paying any interest. Now, normally that's a disadvantage, but right now it is one thing that gold has got going for it, because a zero interest rate is considerably better than a negative interest rate, which is what you're getting on a lot of European and Japanese bonds at the moment. And also it could be what you get on actual deposit rates in the euro area and Japan in the near future if banks pass on negative deposit rates at the central bank to their customers, as some people fear. And I suspect the one reason why people are going into gold is because they fear prolonged negative rates on bonds and cash in large parts of the world. And if you look historically, gold has been negatively correlated with interest rates. And when interest rates were high in the 80s and 90s, and the gold price was low, and as interest rates came down in the 90s and 2000s, the gold price took off. And what we're seeing now is a new leg of that falling interest rates, rising gold story.
Okay. Do you think it's a good portfolio holding to have during market turbulence or even at any other times?
Yes. Historically, Kate's right, gold has been a diversifier in the sense that it has a roughly zero correlation with the all-share index, so it's as likely to rise as fall when shares do badly. However, right now it could be that gold is especially attractive because the circumstances in which equities do badly are likely to be ones in which central banks cut interest rates even more negative, in which bond yields in the euro area become even more negative. And in that circumstance, gold would continue to rise. So it could be, from the point of view of protecting yourself from recessions and the fear of prolonged stagnation, that gold is well worth having. The counterpart to that is, of course, that if those fears recede, then gold will fall. But if those fears do recede, then equities could well take off. So what you lose on gold, you would gain on equities. And in that sense, I think gold has part of a diversified portfolio.
Okay, that's some really interesting. Do you have any particular favoured ways for getting exposure to gold?
No, I agree with Kate here. One thing I would caution against, though, is holding gold mining shares. Now, the problem with those is that shares behave like shares, and simply by virtue of that rather trivial fact, there tends to be a correlation between gold mining shares and the general stock market, and that undermines the main reason for holding gold, which is that it has that diversification benefit.
Okay, so best option then, a gold exchange traded commodity. And you can see some suggestions on funds in our IC Top 50 ETFs list. Now, turning to this week's Portfolio Clinic, this features a 70-year-old reader who, among other things, has been investing in shares listed on the Alternative Investment Market, or AIM for short. The reader's doing this because he thinks AIM shares are a good way to mitigate inheritance tax. But Chris, both you and the two other experts who reviewed the portfolio were generally against him investing in AIM for reasons including the fact that not all AIM shares mitigate inheritance tax, and the ones that do have to be held for at least 2 years. Chris, what are your main concerns of AIM shares?
Well, my main concern is shown up by the historic fact. Since the inception of AIM in the mid-90s, it's fallen by more than 20%, whilst the all-share index has risen by 75%. That draws our attention to the fact that AIM shares historically have been a really bad deal. And I think there are profound psychological reasons for that. One is that people tend to overpay for lottery-type stocks. You know, on an AIM share, you do have the small chance of a very large return. And investors pay too much for that, with the result that, on average, AIM shares are overpriced. And also, people have a tendency to be overconfident about their ability to forecast future corporate growth. They underestimate the extent to which it's random, and that leads them to pay too much for speculative shares. And to put this another way, one thing we know historically is that defensive shares have tended to outperform over the long run. Now, the counterpart to that is that something must underperform, And that something is shares that are not defensive, and those are AIM shares in particular.
Historically not good, and also a high-risk area. But are there any situations where you would consider it okay or a good idea to purchase AIM shares?
The circumstances in which AIM shares do well are pretty rare. But what they are is if you get speculative sentiment consistently improve. This is the sort of thing that's likely if you get optimism about new technologies and therefore some sort of speculative bubble in those speculative stocks that are exposed to what investors perceive to be future new technologies. And AIM did phenomenally well during the tech bubble, for example. And yeah, if we get a repeat of that, then AIM would be the place to be.
Now, is there any particular kind of investor that AIM shares might be suitable for?
To be honest, I doubt it, given their long-run poor performance. And if you fancy having a dabble, then fair enough. But be aware that it's a gamble, and gambles are normally negative-sum games.
Okay, so I think on that note then, if you're able to take a gamble, it would be fair to say that you shouldn't invest in AIM unless you have a very long-term time horizon, a high-risk appetite, and let's say a large portfolio of which only a small portion gets put into the AIM shares. Is that fair, Chris?
I'm not sure that time horizon has anything to do with it, because over the long run, we know that AIM has underperformed, and it might well continue to do so. I've never been sure why time horizon matters.
Well, to give the shares time to recover, you know.
There's no guarantee that a share will recover simply because it's fallen. And in fact, quite the opposite. You know, however far a share has fallen, it can always fall another 100%.
Now, Chris, another thing you didn't like was the fact that the reader featured in the Reader Portfolio Clinic wanted to get exposure to India to achieve growth. Why didn't you think this was a good idea? Aren't emerging markets one of the places you're supposed to invest to get growth?
No, emphatically not. This rather irritates me, because one thing we know for sure, historically speaking, is that there is no correlation at all between a country's economic growth rate and its stock market returns. So economic growth simply does not translate into share price growth. Now, there's lots of reasons for that. I mean, one is that economic growth is partly discounted in advance, so it's only unexpected growth that benefits shares. And another reason is that economic growth doesn't necessarily translate into dividend growth for existing firms. It can accrue to foreign-owned firms that operate in the country. It can go to unquoted firms, to firms that have yet to set up. It can even go to workers. So there's lots of ways for growth to leach out into places where investors don't get it.
So should investors totally avoid emerging markets, or what would be the reasons for having emerging markets funds in your portfolio at the moment?
Well, they certainly shouldn't avoid emerging markets. They should simply forget that silly idea that growth equals stock market returns. The case for investing in emerging markets, I think, is twofold. Firstly, they might be quite cheap right now, given their fall in recent years. And because emerging markets are risky in the sense that they carry crash risk, the risk of doing especially badly in bad times, investors should be compensated for taking on that extra risk. And historically, that's been the case, and there's no reason to suppose that it won't be the case going forward. But there's also a second argument for investing in emerging markets, and that is, ironically, what we were talking about in the context of gold. There is a risk, an unquantifiable risk, that Western economies will suffer secular stagnation, years and years and years of very low growth. Now, for younger investors, this is a really horrible prospect, because it means low returns on your equities plus low wage increases and bad job prospects. And it could well be that investing overseas and in emerging markets is a way to partly protect yourself against that risk of secular stagnation.
Okay, that's some really interesting suggestions there. Thanks for that, Chris. Now, we also have articles on the website explaining why not all AIM shares qualify for inheritance tax relief and some suggestions on how to access the ones which do. Now, many investors hold investments listed on stock markets, such as shares and investment trusts, and are very on the ball when it comes to monitoring the returns they deliver. But what they aren't aware of is how they hold their shares and investment trusts, and the fact that there are actually a number of different ways in which you can hold shares. Now, Emma, you've been looking at this. So first of all, what are the main ways in which you can hold shares?
Well, there are three main ways that you can hold shares. The first is certificated, or what's sort of commonly known as paper shares. And that's the traditional way of buying shares. You buy a share and are sent the share certificate. And when you want to sell the share, you have to send the share certificate back to your broker, post it back. The good thing about certificated shares is that your name is on the share register and you receive all the shareholder rights, such as the ability to attend and vote at AGMs and EGMs directly. The next sort of way in which you can hold shares is personal CREST membership. And that, they're a bit different from certificated paper shares because it's an electronic share holding mechanism. So your shares are bought through your broker and it's recorded on the CREST settlement electronic system. And you are able to sort of record the shares personally as being holding on to you. They're held directly in your personal CREST membership account. And that means that you are actually on the company share register. And again, you will receive all the shareholder rights directly. The other sort of main way of holding shares is nominee accounts. And these are the most common form in the industry. And the difference between a nominee account and certificated or personal CREST membership is that the broker is the one who legally owns the shares, but you as the underlying investor are recorded as the beneficial owner, and that means you receive all the dividends attached to the shares, but the broker is the person who passes these on to you. And there are actually two different types of nominee accounts. You've got pooled nominee accounts, which is the most common form of a nominee account. And that basically means that the broker puts all the different clients, all the shares of their different clients into one account and trades the shares in and out of that account. So it makes it easier and cheaper for brokers to trade their clients' shares. And the other way is designated nominee accounts. Designated nominee accounts is the same sort of structure. The broker remains the legal owner of the shares and you're the beneficial holder. But rather than being pooled with various different clients, you have an individual account.
Okay, now that's interesting. And yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of people don't know that. It's also quite complicated. Just briefly, how do you choose which is the right model for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is that it depends on what's most important to you. So for some people, it's going to be cost. And if it is cost, then nominee accounts are the cheapest around generally. Although there are some providers of personal CREST membership, which won't charge you for having that service. But it tends to be the case that because nominee accounts make it easier for brokers to trade and you're on your behalf, they are cheaper. So if it's cost, nominee accounts are probably the thing that you would want to look at. But for some people, they're more concerned about shareholder rights and their ability to vote and attend AGMs and EGMs, to receive company reports and accounts. And if that's the case, you would probably be more interested in holding a certificated or personal CREST membership scheme, because that allows you to receive the rights directly as a shareholder and you can be in charge of all of that. And then other people might be more concerned about keeping abreast of what actual shares they own and making sure that they are on top of knowing at all times exactly what shares they own, because the nominee account system means that brokers are the ones who have the record of exactly what shares you own. So if you're more concerned about knowing exactly what you own, probably the certificated share system is it will work for you, or the Personal Crest membership will work.
Okay, so that's good to know. Is it very easy to get exactly what you want?
It's actually not as easy as you might think. And this is the Department of Business and Innovation Skills released a report a couple of months ago looking at the different ways in which shareholders think about the options and why they choose them. And actually what they found is that investors are not that aware of the different types of options out there. And that's a problem in terms of people knowing what choices they have. And so one of the things that the report said was that investors don't know this information. And because the pooled nominee account system is what's become most dominant, brokers actually don't sort of have the incentive to explain to investors what other options there are out there. So that's one of the problems, you know, a lack of investor awareness. And then the other problem is that there have been sort of low numbers of providers of some types of these options. So as I've said, pooled nominee accounts, there's lots of providers of those around. You know, most of the brokers that our readers will be familiar with will offer a pooled nominee account. But there's fewer providers of certificated or paper shares account because there's less people sort of trading that. So there's fewer providers around. And Personal Crest membership in particular, is there's not many providers around of that anymore at all. I think it's fallen to about half a dozen or so providers of Personal Crest membership. And designated nominee accounts are also very rare. Lots of brokers, the report found, don't actually advertise that they offer this service. And so you'll either need to ask directly your broker if they can sort of facilitate a designated nominee account for you.
Okay, well, restricted choice there, but important investors know their options. Chris, do you have any feelings on this? Do you hold your investments a particular way?
Well, listening to all that reminded me just what a palaver it is to own shares directly, which is something I don't do. I simply invest in tracker funds, most of which are held through tax shelters such as ISAs or pensions. Simply because I think that all the evidence is that it's very difficult to outperform the market unless you invest in momentum or defensive stocks. And passive investing for me is the easiest thing to do. It's as simple as that.
Thanks for that. And thank you, Emma. Now, you can see Emma's full article in the magazine on the website, and she's got some really comprehensive tips on how to choose the right way to hold your shares. That brings us to the end of this week's podcast. So it just remains to thank Chris Dillow, Investors Chronicle's economist, Kate Bealey, Deputy Personal Finance Editor at Investors Chronicle, and personal finance writer Emma Agumang. You can read more on investing in gold, the risks of AIM shares, and the best way to hold your shares in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle on the website. Thank you for listening, and have a great weekend.